All right, hi everybody, and welcome to Lecture 20 in this ancient history program of History at Our House for the elementary class. We're going to continue with our story of ancient Egypt here, and we are focusing in particular on the pyramids as these great monuments that symbolize or that show us what ancient Egypt was all about. And what it was all about was a life along the Nile that was connected to supernatural forces, and the thing in between was the Pharaoh, this god king who ruled over the country, starting with Menes-Narmer. So we're going to now look a little bit more closely kind of at the early story of ancient Egypt and talk about the beginning of the Age of Pyramids and how that came about. And then we're going to finish today with a question and a little bit of a puzzle for everybody, which is how come the Egyptians stopped building pyramids? They only did it for about 500 years. And we'll have some important clues today to help us answer that question. And so before we get into that, though, a couple things that I think need to be touched upon today before we get into the new material. And the first item is that I think it's the most crucial thing of all, if we're talking about ancient Egypt, that we understand that the pyramids were two things at once. And that the fact that they were these two things helps us to understand what was so important to the Egyptians. And if we grasp this, then we really understand the thing, the most important thing that we need to understand about Egypt. Of course, if we don't grasp it, then we are kind of, well, we really don't get it. There's no way we're really going to get it. We might be able to pile up a whole bunch of interesting facts, but we'll never be able to make sense of them. So, what were the two things that the pyramids were at the same time? Let's start with that question. And then we'll go to the second question, which is how do they tell us what was so important to the Egyptians? So first thing, what were the two things? Mr. Powell gave it a hyphenated name. What was it? Already slipped out of memory? All right, this is why we have to review, right? Well, this is why you have class notes as well, so that at the end of the week you can read and remind yourself. But Rosetta's going to try. Go ahead, Rosetta.
Was it two? And wasn't it? I'm not sure if this is the right word. A memorial?
Okay, memorial is a good word, but not the perfect word that we need. So yes, the first word was tomb. Okay, so they were structures to house the dead bodies of the pharaohs, but they were something else. They were highly visible tombs. What was the second word that captures this idea? This highly visible construction that people are meant to look at and constantly be reminded of what the tomb is there for and why it was constructed and how life is supposed to be understood. What's that second word? See, this is why we need to review. The second word and the second function of the pyramids was to be monuments. Good word, the word monument. Didn't we talk about other monuments? The Statue of Liberty and the Empire State Building and so on, right? So that was the reason why we talked about that yesterday, because they represent a culture. Monuments really tell us what people want to remember, what people want to be thinking about on a regular basis. Okay? So the pyramids were a combination monument and tomb. So that's why I kind of just, to remind myself of that, I call them monument tombs. Okay, so Patrick, your job yesterday, your homework assignment was to be able to tell the class how do these monument tombs tell us what was important to the Egyptians? So go ahead, tell us what we talked about yesterday.
Important?
Yeah, so let's start with that. What does important mean? That's part.
Something that you pay attention to, something you do a lot.
Okay. Important means something worthy of attention, something that you pay attention to. Okay, good. And then the second part of the question then was, how do you know what's important to somebody? And your answer was, just repeat that for us.
You do it a lot and pay attention to it.
Right. Okay. You spend a lot of time on it. You dedicate a part of your life to it, right? And that's part of the paying attention to. Okay, good. So the Egyptians obviously paid great attention to the pyramids. There's nothing in the history of mankind, indeed, that symbolizes such a dedication to any particular idea. We really can't find it. In terms of the sheer amount of effort that was put into each building. And so that's why the pyramids are so amazing for us as students of history. They just leap out of the desert and scream, "This was Egypt." And all we gotta do is pay close attention, read the documents, and understand them in connection to the pyramids, and we've got the basics. And pretty much all that we need, unless we decide we're gonna become experts in Egypt. And very few people choose to do that. All right, so let's go now to the story of how the Egyptians came to build the pyramids. There's kind of some interesting things to learn about that. And then we'll get set up for the question, which we're going to end with today, which is why did they stop building them? Okay, so we go back to the beginning of our story, which is Menes-Narmer. And that was when again? Okay, at least most of the hands went up pretty quick. Julia?
3000 BC.
3000 BC. Okay, we have the ruler of Upper Egypt conquering Lower Egypt. And just for fun, let me bring up the geography map and pose another puzzle to you guys. I like questions and puzzles. Look at this geography map. Isn't that strange? Lower Egypt is on top of Upper Egypt. What's up with that? Wyatt, Henry, what do you think?
Because Upper Egypt is literally above Lower Egypt.
In what sense? Certainly isn't on the map.
Since the Nile flows to the sea, so then Lower Egypt is, well, in a lower altitude than Upper Egypt.
Well said. Good word. Altitude, right? The terrain is such that a river always flows downhill, right? To the sea level, right? And so the land is above the sea, and the higher the land, well, that's where the water comes from, and it goes downhill to the sea. So yeah, this is upper in the sense of being above in terms of altitude. But why is it underneath in terms of the map? Who knows that? How come we got it backwards? Or did we? Did we get it backwards, Opal? Yeah, that's what Wyatt said, but that's not what I was asking in my second question, which was, why do we have the lower part at the top? That's the other part of the question. Okay, and we understand the why we use these terms, but why do we then not organize it so that the map is, you know, upper part upper? How come the lower part is at the top? Who knows that answer? All right, it's a little thing about maps. Maps, when we make maps of the Earth, we could really organize this map any way that we want, truthfully. But it is a convention, which means a habit, a usual way of doing things, that geographers all have agreed to do it. And so the convention is that when you make a map, so that you can always kind of easily get oriented to how things are on the map, the convention is you put north at the top. So that way, whenever you look at a map, you can be pretty sure that north is at the top. And you immediately know, okay, this is north, this is south, this is east, this is west. You can immediately get an orientation to the way that things are. Okay, so we know immediately that the Nile flows from south to north, right? We know how this is facing on the surface of the Earth. That's the idea. Okay, so lower ends up being on top. Okay, so Menes-Narmer of Upper Egypt conquers Lower Egypt. So he went downstream. That kind of makes sense, huh? Be harder to conquer Upper Egypt from Lower Egypt because you gotta sail upstream. But so he comes and he unifies Egypt, becomes the one pharaoh of the country. All right, and now, well, life goes on, right? There used to be two kings. They used to have two separate crowns, but now there's one, and he's got both crowns. But other than that, what changes in life? Other than that, you know, what changes in life? Because life basically amounts to, at this stage of history, in archaic history, what does life look like? Very, very different than it does now. So we have to kind of have this historical imagination and imagine ourselves living back then. What does our day look like when we get up through to when we go to sleep? What does it look like? There's no electronics. There's no television. There's no internet. There's no electricity. There are no cars. There are no airplanes. What does it look like? I try to imagine how different it was. What did everybody have to do before modern times? And by modern, we aren't talking about much more than about the last 200 years. What did everybody have to do? I mean, there are very few people who didn't do it. What was, you know, people didn't go to school and then have guidance counselors that would say to them, okay, what do you want to be when you grow up? Nope, no such thing. Because what were you? There wasn't any choice. What were you in ancient times? We studied this somewhat last year about how people barely had about one outfit to wear because then we get the Industrial Revolution and people are starting to make much more thread and they're able to weave it all together with power looms and you've got the steam engine that can power all the equipment and so on. All right, but before that, you've got one pair of clothes which you made yourself or your mom made it, right? So what, you know, what was life like, Rosetta? Yeah, certainly poverty was a constant. I mean, by any modern standard, everybody in the past was poor. And pretty much every modern person who shops at Walmart is immeasurably wealthier than even the Pharaoh of Egypt. Hard to imagine. But if you think about it, it's true. Because even poor people today tend to have a car. Now, this is a thing that if a Pharaoh saw a car, you know, he would think that you were the god, not him. Right? Never mind an airplane. Just about anybody can afford an airplane ride to some other city nowadays. Okay, but a car? I mean, think about it. You're the Pharaoh, and the best you can do is you gotta have another person stand behind you with a really big fan in order to stay cool. So if you don't have an awful lot of money today, you plug in a fan, and it's constantly shooting air at you. You've got a better fan than the Pharaoh's got. And if you've got just a little bit of money today, you can also have some air conditioning in your house. And if you live in a cold place, you can have a central heating system in your house. I mean, this is a luxury that no Egyptian pharaoh could have imagined. This is godlike power. Okay, but what about regular people back then? What did everybody have to do? This is just hard to imagine what life was like. Everybody had to grow food. There weren't any supermarkets. That's not how you get your food. You gotta grow it. So when you're a kid back in ancient Egypt and you're living your life and you get up in the morning, what do you gotta do? Take a bucket down to the Nile, get some water. What else? Maybe, you know, make sure that see how the chickens are doing, if you got what those or the goats or whatever, take care of them and do all the chores on the farm. Rosetta?
You have to work.
You have to work. Yeah, kids worked. Yeah, the child labor was not something that people objected to back then. It was necessary. And the whole family worked in some way or another at different times during your life. And you know, different time during the day, different time during the season, different times during your life. You were basically working nonstop and, you know, just to get enough food to live. So you got this pharaoh, and he's conquering the territory and everything, and there's a lot of bloodshed and war and everything, and then everybody wants to get back down to life, right? I mean, war is hopefully, you know, temporary, and you've got these people that are doing this kind of activity that's very different from the regular people, and then later on, the regular people get back to life. Right? And they're growing food and they're trying to survive. And the Nile is flooding every year. And that's bringing down new soil for you. And you're able to plant your crops and hopefully have enough food in order to survive one more year. And it repeats every year the same cycle and life goes on. Okay. So let's try to put this all together. This existence kind of normal life, the life of a regular person, which just consists back then of growing enough food in order to survive. And then all of this stuff that we usually talk about in history, which is the rulers and all of their seemingly, you know, great grand scale activities, conquering and ruling and doing all of that kind of stuff and being some sort of god, right? I mean, in a way, when you put it that way, doesn't it seem like kind of such a separate thing? I mean, what's the connection? How do we make sense of the whole, of Egyptian life and really think about what it was like and how people lived and so on? And then make sense of these pyramids that we've got. So again, it all comes down to the Nile. Really, everything in Egypt was about the Nile. Egypt was, as Herodotus said, the gift of the river. And the pharaohs had to respect that too. So if you're going to be a pharaoh, are you going to grow food? If you're going to be a god king, are you gonna get down in the dirt and grow food? Sometimes people don't like to answer obvious questions, I guess. No. All right, so then how do you survive? Real question this time. How do you as the Pharaoh survive day to day? Opal?
Get someone else to do it for you.
Okay. And so you've got to get other people to do it. You're the Pharaoh. You're in charge of the whole country. In fact, basically, you get the rest of the country to do it for you. Okay. Now we're going to have to talk about, well, how does that work, right? I mean, it's one thing to say that. It's one thing to just use those words. Get other people to do it. Well, what do you mean get other people to do it? All right, we've got to really kind of understand how would life really be organized? How do you get that food that the other people are making? Right, the other people, the regular peasants are making food, and you as the Pharaoh have got to get some of it. And, you know, it works kind of similarly to life today. It's just a few things are different. Some of the details are different. Right? Because you've got some people today, for instance, in the government, and, well, they don't grow food either. And they don't produce anything either. So how do they get taken care of? How does modern government work? It's the same as how old government works. How does it work? How do the people who are in charge of the society, how do they get fed? One word. Rosetta?
They pay.
They what?
Well, they buy, don't you? You buy food.
Yeah, well, how? How do they get the... I mean, you say we buy food today. Okay, well, how do you get the money to buy food? If you're in the government, where does the government get its money? That's today. Back in Egypt, there was no money. But how does the government get money, Rosetta?
Tax?
Taxes! That's the word we're looking for. Okay, how does a government work? It works because of taxes. It takes from the people. Okay? Now, back in ancient Egypt, you don't have any money. They hadn't invented it yet. Well, that's another thing they didn't have. They didn't have cars. They didn't have airplanes. They didn't have electricity. They didn't have money. They didn't have money. So... okay, the Pharaoh needs to survive, so he's not going to send somebody to the market to buy stuff there. He literally has got to get the food from the people. That's the taxes. All right, so now here we're going to understand the special way of life of ancient Egypt. Every year the Nile floods. Every year there's a new layer of water and soil that goes on the farms. Let's go to that picture. Okay, right? Here's life along the Nile. And every year, these farms get the water that they need. They grow the crops. And the Pharaoh sends his tax collectors, and they take some of it for the Pharaoh. All right, so now this was, well, kind of a tricky proposition. And it always is. Because nowadays, you're going to hear in a modern American election, you're always going to hear about people talking about taxes. And you're going to hear people arguing, and they're going to say, well, we want the government to lower taxes, or we should have higher taxes, or people, you know, are trying to discuss how that should work. Nowadays, we talk about it, right? Nowadays, in a more democratic society, people talk about it and argue about it and make laws with their representatives in the government. Okay, back then, the Pharaoh doesn't go to the farmers and say, how much you want to give me? Right? Because the farmer is a poor, starving person with barely enough food to survive. If the Pharaoh went to him and says, well, how much you want to give me? He's going to say, well, I don't have any to give. Sorry, I don't want to give you any. I grew this. This is mine. I need it to survive. My children need it to survive. I'm not going to give you any. Well, the pharaohs and governments don't work that way. They say, give it to me. Right? And that's taxes are taken from people by force. But, okay, it's kind of, to have a government working, to have a society, the people have to agree to it. They've got to put up with it. Otherwise, can anybody think of an example, say around 1776, of how it breaks down when it doesn't work? That hint was too fast, was it? Can anybody think of an example in 1776 in which the whole arrangement where a society has a ruler and it takes taxes from the people and they agree to it, but it breaks down because somehow they decide they're not willing to do it anymore? Do we have perhaps an anchor fact pertaining to that? Julia?
Declaration of Independence.
Okay, the American Revolution, right? The leaders of the United States saying to King George III, we're not going to put up with it anymore. And we're going to create a government of individual rights. Okay, what about the Egyptians? Now, they didn't know anything about individual rights, but they did know about individual need, the need to survive and everything like that. So if the pharaohs told them, give me your crops... Well, back in ancient history, people would rebel too, right? So how are we going to get a society that works here? How are we going to get an organized place, a civilization that lasts generation after generation, and there's an arrangement where people are living, and it kind of works? The pharaoh's got to do something. He doesn't make any food, so he's got to get it. And he's got to be this kind of a god, so he's got to have lots of extra, and he's got to have a really big temple and all kinds of things that are really grand and everything. So he's got to get a lot from the people. But if he takes too much, then they're going to rebel. And we're going to see that happens in Egyptian history like everywhere else. All right, so how does the arrangement work? Well, the pharaohs had a lot of different people working for them. So we'll learn more about the details of that along the way. The pharaohs had a lot of people working for them. They had priests that were in charge of the Egyptian religion. And one of the things that the priests would do is they would go, they had this island in the middle of the Nile, up in the higher parts of the Nile, and they had an island, and they had a structure on the island that was called a Nilometer. And this is kind of a more modern one that was built later on. But you see what it is a chamber, a structure that has this big pole in the center with markings on it. It's basically a huge ruler. And this was built on an island, and the water of the Nile would come. And depending on the level of the water, of course, the water would rise up to a certain point. And the priests would know how high is the water. And the priest would report back to the pharaoh, and they would say, the water came up to this level this year. And can anybody understand why this would be such an important fact for Egyptian life? Opal?
Maybe for how, you know, for making the crops, but what I don't understand is why would the priests be doing that?
Oh, well, okay. That's a good question. I'll come back to it. Keep that question in mind. But let's not worry about so much who was doing it. Okay? But somebody working for the pharaoh is measuring the Nile. And Opal says, well, they're going to know about how much water there is for the crops. What if the Nile doesn't go very high that year? What do we know? What's going to happen to the crops? Rosetta?
We're not going to be good crops.
Yeah, right. It's going to be a poor growing season. The people are going to have less food. What if the Nile goes way too high this year? What could that be? What would that do? Look at these people back here. Oh, let me go back to it. I apologize. Let me bring it up. Most annoying feature of the entire Mac operating system. Never mind. So what if the Nile goes way too high? Here's everybody's houses. Julia?
It floods?
That's really what we call a flood, right? And what happens to all these houses over here?
They get like washed away.
Yeah, and how good is life going to be then, right? Also pretty bad. So the Nile River is pretty regular. Most years you're going to get, you know, a certain amount, and it works well. If you got too little, people won't have enough food. You got too much, their lives are going to be really disrupted as well. So if you're the Pharaoh and you need to tax them, then being able to measure the Nile would be a really important thing. Because if you go to the people, remember, and you take too much from them, they're going to rebel. So if the Nile is too low, what should you do with taxes? In order to make sure that society keeps on working here in this ancient time. Julia?
Make them small.
Make them lower, right? Take less from the people, because otherwise they're going to rebel. If the Nile's too high, you got to do the same thing. But if the Nile measurements are standard and good, and you know that the people's crops are going to be reliable that year, then you can raise the taxes up for yourself that way. Okay, so we have this kind of organized way of life. After Menes Narmer conquers, and there's these pharaohs ruling over all of Egypt, this is how life works. Everyday life is people making their own food, growing crops, harvesting the crops, taking care of the animals on the farm, building their own rafts for the river, and doing all those things that, well, nowadays, my gosh, we can hardly even imagine it because our lives are so removed from that. But that's what it was like for them. And the Pharaoh, if he doesn't want to be at war all the time, he's going to settle down in his castle or whatever kind of structure he's got, and he's going to tax the people, and they're going to have this kind of way of life day in, day out. And it's got to be an agreement, right? There's got to be this society has to work in a certain way, like ours does in our own way, right? And it's got to keep going over time. And so as a part of that, the pharaohs are going to measure the Nile. They're going to have people helping them to understand how well life is going in Egypt and how they should act as the ruler. And then over time, well, we get this idea, hey, how do we kind of reinforce the idea that the Pharaoh is in charge? How do we really get people to accept, you know, the importance of the Pharaoh, and so on? Because at first, the Pharaohs are buried in just really, really basic things. Like, this is the kind of place that you would expect to find Menes Narmer if you ever found his tomb. Okay? It's called a mastaba. Look how unimpressive it is compared to the pyramids of Giza, right? Just a very flat stone structure called the mastaba. And underneath it, if we scroll down, you could see there was the chambers were underground for the actual bodies. But very basic, kind of very unimpressive. But then along comes some pretty clever Egyptian architects. And there was an architect called Imhotep. He appears to have been kind of the guy who invented the pyramid. So he's kind of worth remembering. Here, I'll chat his name for you guys in the chat box. Imhotep. And along comes Imhotep, and he then creates the first layered mastaba tomb. See this? You take one tomb, and then you build another one on top of it. And you take another rectangle and you build it on top, and another rectangle. You keep putting one smaller rectangle on top of the one underneath. And before you know it, what do you got? A pyramid. Pretty cool. How big is this pyramid? Well, notice down here in the corner, we got two people sitting there. So it's big. This is the first major pyramid in the history of the world. This is the tomb of Djoser, I think was the name of the pharaoh. So Imhotep designed this type of structure. And after this, we start to see pyramids. We start to see monuments to the pharaohs. We start to see this idea of making the pharaoh much more of an obvious god king. And so, you know, you've got to give him those taxes because the Nile is this thing that we have to take care of. The gods are in charge of the Nile, and the pharaoh is one of our gods. And so if we want all that to work, well, we gotta We have to have this vision of the great Pharaoh as a god king. And so this became the idea of building the pyramids. And off they go. After Imhotep, they start building more and more of them. Here, of course, they want to build them bigger and bigger and bigger. Here's some people down here as well. Again, giving us scale. And so the pharaohs wanted bigger and bigger and taller and taller. This is a neat one because they tried to build it really tall, but they couldn't. So they found that if you build the pyramids too tall, that they crumble because the weight is too great on the stuff underneath. So this is called a bent pyramid because they discovered that if you keep on going like this, it's eventually going to just, the whole thing's going to collapse. So they've got to build them kind of shallower, and so they've got to build them wider and in order to get them taller. And eventually we get to the pyramids at Giza around the year 2500 BC. So the pharaohs are building these to reinforce the idea that they are the rightful rulers of the land. They are the god kings, and everybody who's growing their crops along the Nile will look at that and remember and be willing to give their taxes because they're hoping that the gods will take care of Egypt. Okay, so this is Egyptian life. It's very simple in a way compared to modern life. It's very simple. But it's very different, which is part of what makes it hard to understand. Right? We just don't have a similar way of life anymore because this is what we're studying in Egypt is archaic, right? We just don't live that way anymore. All right, but it's fascinating because these people would build these colossal things in the desert and they had a life. They organized it for hundreds of years, as it turns out, about 3,000 years entirely. So that's kind of amazing. How did it all work? And why did it go away? Those are our questions when it comes to archaic history. How did people who lived in such a different way, how did they really live? And then, you know, why did it disappear? How did we get to the part of the world, that you know, of life that we're really living in now, right? So, in order to understand this, we gotta get a clearer picture of the real life of a pharaoh. Not just kind of the idea of a great god king. That's an idea. That's like a word. But what goes inside that? What does it really look like? How does a god really rule a country? How does it really work? So when we come back on Monday, we'll look at the real life of the pharaohs, the real way that life was organized, such as, right, here's something from our painting. This guy is supposed to be a god, but he's a man. So what are things that he's going to have in his life? A wife, right? A person to be with, a woman to get married to, and so on, right? There's going to be a queen, and there will be children, and all kinds of other things, real things. And what we'll find out is that this idea of a god ruling over a country, well, it's kind of tough to keep it up. You might be able to build these pyramids and you might be able to enslave 100,000 people to do it and so on. And you might be able to organize it, but it's not easy to keep it going. It isn't easy to keep it going. And eventually the Egyptians weren't able to do it. So we'll see. Well, how does it really work to be this pharaoh? And who are the other people that he's got to rely on? Like his guards, like his scribes, These characters here, probably priests, the queen, the lady that keeps air conditioning going, and so on, right? How does life really work? And this is how we can understand how eventually it would fall apart. Because what we'll see about how it worked was, well, you know, you'll see all of the gaps, you'll see all of the holes, you'll see all of the kind of problems in trying to organize a society this way. And when we study more of the history, we'll see, well, actually what happened in Egypt was it fell apart on a regular basis and had to be put back together. And then it fell apart and had to be put back together. And then it fell apart again and had to be put back together. And so on. And so it wasn't actually nearly as stable as you might think, or as simple or as easy. It really was hard to live this way. All right, so we'll come back to life in archaic Egypt and what it was really like on Monday. Of course, tomorrow we'll start looking at a new image in history through art. All right, we are done for today. Thank you, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow.
Mr. Powell.
Bye.
Bye.